Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You are listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and I'm so pleased to have with me on the line from Salt Lake City, on the left, Shireen Gourbani.
Hello, and welcome to new listeners.
Yes, we get to welcome new listeners from Utah Public Radio. We're happy to have you part of the Both Sides of the Aisle family. And we have Dan McKay on the right. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, everybody.
I love that we get to introduce these new listeners to our civil conversation. We talk about the state of our state, but also our world and nation from the left, the right, and the center. And I want to start by just talking about the Democratic National Convention. Shireen, this is home turf for you. Not normal times. We were talking off air. I've just been interested in how many Republicans are making an appearance at the Democratic National Convention. Of course, it's a produced convention. But by my count, you have Meg Whitman, Christy Todd Whitman, Susan Molinari, Colin Powell, Governor Kasich. They even did a tribute to Senator John McCain. What do you make of this, Shireen?
It's certainly unusual times, and I think the DNC had decided pretty early on that we simply weren't going to have a convention in person. And that gave a long runway to put together a lot of content, to get a lot of guests, and really put together an unusual, but I think in some ways a really exciting opportunity to create what is probably the most accessible convention that's ever happened. And mm-hmm. So if people want to get a sense of what that feels like, the energy, of course, of being in a room in a big convention hall, sharing, you know, meeting up with people, talk about the experience. I've never been, but meeting with old friends, getting this kind of sense of community. That's not happening. But people who would maybe for reasons economic or otherwise not have the opportunity to travel to be in that room, they're getting a little taste of it. And I think that production, that platform that allows a lot of people in is exciting.
Yeah. Dan, what do you make of what they're doing? Do you think it'll be effective? And what do you project for next week when the Republicans do their virtual convention?
I think conventions are a great opportunity for everybody to tell their story, right? And I will say, I think the Democrats are doing a great job of distracting everyone from their policies and are focused on the pomp and circumstance, right? They don't want to talk about policies. What they want to do is Donald Trump is a problem. That is their whole platform. And what they found is other people who agree with them, some Republicans, some independent, and they're including them in their convention, which I think is wise. But this is really a moratorium on Donald Trump. And it really is that way. I would like to say this is a Republican only thing, but it was the same way for George W. Bush second when he ran for his second term. It was the same way for Barack Obama when he was running for his second term. The Republicans were all about why Barack Obama is a problem. Mm-hmm. So this doesn't surprise me. But I cannot wait for the American people to stop and think about the policies of the Democratic Party and the promises they're making and how they're going to get you to pay for them. Mm-hmm. I can't wait, because that is the winning conversation. You can talk about how Twitter's bad. You can talk about, you know, sacred institutions of the Democratic Party that they've set up and are really running the government so that everything can be on cruise control. You can do all of those things all you want. But when it comes down to it, the American taxpayer really is king.
Yeah. Dan likes to provoke Shireen. And I know that provocations there, Shireen. Let's hear from you. But I wanted to just make this point. And I think it was Michelle Obama, but I could have it wrong. But I remember one of the speakers saying, Donald Trump is not just underperforming on matters of policy, he underperforms on matters of character. And as a woman voter and knowing the gap that Donald Trump has with women, I think that's a winning statement. So Shireen, let's hear your feedback.
Well, I would say the data out there suggests, Dan, that we're winning on many of the issues. Most Americans agree that our healthcare system is broken, it costs too much, too few people have access. Many Americans agree and would like to see, actual foreign policy that puts us in a position nationally that's globally that is safer in a place of leadership. We've really lost that with the current president. when we think about some of the basic things like wanting to protect Social Security and Medicare, that's where Democrats are. And we are fighting to protect jobs and American workers. So it's so disingenuous when we sort of have that kind of blanket, you're going to hate when you hear our policies. When people are polled on the actual substance of what Democrats stand for, largely the American public agrees. It's, I think, a question of, yeah, how it gets paid for, how that works, what's structured in that. But understanding that a lot of people are living close to the edge in this country, we have far too many people living in poverty. We want to see investments in our education and in American workers. Those are the things that are central to, I guess, my politics, especially the issue of healthcare. And I do think that there is an opportunity here for us to really think about the sort of centrist place that Joe Biden comes from, and that it's an opportunity for us to move out of what's been a deeply chaotic and troubling time in this administration to hopefully get back to some sense of normalcy and some sense of leadership globally.
There's the word normalcy. I've heard a lot of people say that's what they're trying to convey.
Liberals just got so comfortable with the way Barack Obama did things that is normal to them. You realize if you go through like the executive orders of the various presidents, the 8 years of Barack Obama and the 4 years of Donald Trump, and you line those four with what the American people wants, honestly, Donald Trump's resume for executive orders and compare them to what the people want is more in line, ironically, than what Barack Obama came up with.
But what you're touching on here,
really are different. I get it in a lot of ways, but I think what everybody doesn't like is that Donald Trump just doesn't put up with anybody's crap. And I think Barack Obama was much more patient than people, you know, than Donald Trump is certainly. But I
like how you go back to this executive order issue, because I think what it does is continue to expose that we have our House and our Senate are dysfunctional, and we have a lot of work to do there to have a more functional form of government so that we don't have to have all of these executive orders. And I think that's something the American people should be looking at too.
I don't want it to be functional.
Oh, Shereen. Boy.
I love when they are dysfunctional and the only thing they can do is come up with money to give to locals that the locals can then solve for local problems.
And
that
is
generally the best way for Washington to, quote, function.
I think dysfunction is very expensive, Dan, but that's another matter. I want to transition to the Postmaster General, and I'm going to do it with a quote from Michelle Obama, because I know I'm quoting her twice, but she said in the convention, "So if you take one thing from my words tonight, it is this. If you think things cannot possibly get worse, trust me, they can and they will." Well, so now we have the U.S. Postal Service, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, a lot of things happening, right? He's been making cutbacks on overtime. He's been getting rid of sorting machines, getting rid of drop-off space, caught the eye of Speaker Pelosi. She's called him in to testify. That'll happen this weekend. There'll be a vote. Speaker Pelosi's taking this very seriously, Dan.
Okay. So I think everybody recognizes that the U.S. Postal Service is in active decline as far as a necessary service for the country. Everybody recognizes that. It is a bipartisan, agreed upon issue. The problem with that, though, is that the president made his comments about being frustrated with mail-in voting, and then changes that were already scheduled to be made and had been worked on through Congress and everything else started to kick in at the same time. And it just shows you President Trump did not, in my opinion, didn't coordinate his comments with the Postal Service comments and with the Postal Service's actions. And so you had this issue where natural cuts, natural changes to the Postal Service were taking place at the same time he made those. I wish he was a little more careful about stuff like that. That being said, President Obama, during the same time, he fundamentally changed the way the Postal Service accounts for its finances and made it so that the Postal Service is going to constantly look like it's always running in the red, which it does. And that change is really what's sparking a lot of these changes today. But the problem is, anytime the government gets skinny, or it cuts back, or it changes something, someone's job is threatened, and then let the complaining begin. And that's certainly what's happening here.
So are you talking about the requirement of the Postal Service to fund their pensions through like 70 years out?
No, that was a change that was made earlier. I'm talking about when
that was made by Republicans that makes it look like it's running a terrible deficit all the time.
No, this was in the accounting process with the GAO's office or the Government Office of Accountability. So it's a different element. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it here. You can Google it. But the fact of the matter is, when we changed those accounting processes and looked at how the post office service is being run, if you look at, and this is actually correct, if you look at the UPS, if you look at FedEx, if you look at DHL and the services they offer internationally, certainly they are more expensive, but they're making a profit as opposed to the way the U.S. Postal Service runs, which is constantly a loss. And I have checked my mail now and I get so much garbage in my mail. I'm trying to figure out why these retailers and, you know, everybody who's sending me ads are freeloading on the taxpayer.
In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Utah legislature calling themselves into special session. I'm Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. I'm with Shireen Gourbani on the left and Dan McKay on the right. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
Dan McKay on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and we are talking now about the Utah legislature, who will meet in another special session this week. Not surprising to meet often during a public health crisis. What's unusual is that they call themselves into session, and they get to pick what's called the call. They get to pick what they get to consider. The proclamation that they issued includes 22 items. Not all of them relate to COVID-19, but they got a state to run. Dan, what is the big issue that you would highlight for our listeners?
You know, the big issue that's brewing underneath that most people, you know, are aware of, but really don't think about much, is the interchange between the legislature and the governor's office as it relates to the emergency powers. So, you know, the governor has emergency powers granted in, sort of in the Constitution by analogy, but in statute for sure. And so that power has to be renewed every 30 days by the legislature. And so it requires the governor to come back, kind of be working with the legislature, those kinds of things. Well, the question right now is, is the emergency still ongoing or is the emergency over with? And this is kind of the debate that's percolating behind the scenes and is certainly part of the conversation. As, you know, the governor's, really the emergency powers is, you know, I view it as, having two functions, really getting state money and resources to a problem. So like if a natural disaster occurred, it is mobilizing and getting things to a problem. And then, you know, a few weeks, and we've seen this before, kind of a couple weeks afterwards, the emergency power really isn't needed anymore. And we've kind of, you know, built up a process to kind of handle the emergency at the legislative level. This virus is very different, though. You've got, you know, we've got ongoing cases and they're regulated, you know, self-regulating in some ways up and down. And we've got testing ongoing. We've got new systems in place. We've got, you know, kids that are now returning to school and that's new. And so this virus, though, we're in what, month five of fighting this virus, so to speak. And at the legislative level, we're having this debate as to whether or not the emergency powers should continue. And it's been interesting. Go to my social media and chime in. It really has been interesting to talk to people.
Shireen, are we in an emergency?
So I think this is where the structures of government maybe aren't as nimble as they need to be to respond to what's happening, right? So when we think about something like a pandemic that has just a long-reaching timeline, it's really probably not what emergency is constituted or as it's defined in what we currently have in our structures. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that's different, I think, between what the legislature is facing and what we at the county level are facing is that we meet weekly. And so we're able to really be a little bit more nimble when it comes to this issue. And frankly, had a pretty healthy debate about this in our council meeting this week, where the Republicans were at I would say, at odds with each other over what is the fiscally responsible thing to do. When we're in an emergency, we have the ability to pull down FEMA dollars or other resources and to make sure that that continuity exists and continuity of operation exists. I think there's a lot of people who are right now facing a lot of uncertainty and worry as we head back to schools, what that's going to do to our numbers, what that's going to do to community spread when it comes to the pandemic. And so feeling like, I think this is it's an interesting issue. It's certainly one that deserves attention and I think could use some refinement. But, you know, I'm really interested in, for example, the executive appropriations, looking at just at the legislature in this last week, actually yesterday, denying $5 million in PPE for schools and teachers, looking at $55 million to bail out a bankrupt coal company in Kentucky. When we're looking at kind of what's happening, I think this question of emergency powers is interesting, but we need to be reading the room. People are very worried about what's happening in their schools and how we're going to invest and what's going to happen in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Wow. You know, Dr. Michael Good at University of Utah Health, he made a comment early in the pandemic that I think of as I hear the two of you talk. He said that COVID-19 is acute for the individual, but chronic for the community. And he's referring to the economic long arms or long tail of COVID-19. And we have our hands full. No question about it.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, right? Because I came up with an analogy, and it's been interesting as we've talked to people about it. You know, for the fireman, a house fire is an emergency until the flames are out, right? Or maybe till the investigation is complete, right? Or, but to the family, it's probably longer, right? Mm-hmm. They need secure housing. They need to make sure that they have food, they have mm-hmm. clothing, they have those kinds of things. So that emergency lasts longer. So the question is, should the emergency be until the house is completed, completely rebuilt, and the yard and the landscaping done? Is that when the emergency ends? I would argue that there's somewhere between where the firemen leave and when the family is stabilized, you know, there's somewhere probably after that last step where we're in right now. And the question is, how long do we want to just leave prerogative on a day-to-day operational basis really to one person making decisions rather than a statutory framework, which is fine. I think it's a very healthy debate for our republic to be having. And I totally understand the county is different in a lot of ways. You know, the one thing I had beef a little bit with the county, Shireen, is like, I think the motion was, hey, let's revisit this in February or extend the emergency powers until February or something, which left my mind. I was like, that seems long, but you know, officials. And if, you know, you want to wait till the landscaping's in, by all means.
Yeah, that wasn't the debate, actually. So the question was, should it match the federal designation, which is until December 30th, or should it be every 30 days? Well, we meet every week, right? So taking up the time to kind of rehash this every 30 days is not necessarily in the interest of the public or a great use of taxpayer dollars. But the question was, on December 30th, county council typically doesn't meet on that day. So it went to the next meeting, which is January 5th. So it's really within just a 5-day window of the expiration of the federal designation. So that's what we were mirroring.
Let me run through a couple of quick topics I think our listeners will find interesting. Rapper Kanye West is going to appear on Utah's ballot for president. He qualified in the past week. Shireen, what did you make of that?
Not my candidate.
Dan, what'd you make of that?
I am shocked that Shireen is not interested in Kanye West. Okay, that said, I think it's awesome. Hey, why not? Let's have a robust discussion. I'm trying to channel my inner Natalie. Is anybody impressed? Let's have a robust discussion with lots of candidates.
Marketplace of ideas.
Marketplace of ideas.
Hey, okay. How about this one? We have these two contingents, one Latter-day Saints for Trump and another one Latter-day Saints for Joe, both organizing, using their sense of community with the faithful in the LDS Church to politicize this election. I'm not a big fan of this. Bob Bennett's son, Jim Bennett, he had a quote in the Salt Lake Tribune I thought was interesting. He said, both religion and politics are healthier when they stay away from each other. Quick comment there, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, I totally understand Jim feeling that way. I think, you know, I think social distancing is probably more appropriate. I would still allow them to talk to each other and inform, because, you know, there's no real way of getting away from people's religious belief when they're looking at policy. But that said, like, I think the interesting one for me is the Mormons, or sorry, Latter-day Saints for Trump. I think it highlights what most people are seeing in polls, which is the president is struggling to connect. His direct style is struggling to connect with our very passive aggressive culture.
Mm. Shireen, I want to hear your comments. And as I transition to you, did you note that the Latter-day Saints for Trump used to have a temple as their background on their website, their Facebook page, and they pulled it? I was happy to see that as an active Latter-day Saint.
Yeah, I think the appropriation of religious iconography in the space of politics is one that can be very troubling for people who hold those institutions dear. And I'm glad that that was changed. I think that was the right move. And I'm just hearing feedback in the community that it wasn't appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Shireen, I want to stay with you for just a second. You have a lot of interest in tracking evictions and trying to understand what's happening with some of our most vulnerable in the population. There was a protest rally against mass convictions outside some Salt Lake City apartments. Did you track that?
I did. I actually went over listen to the stories of renters who are in this space. We are seeing in Salt Lake County really a huge jump in rent. In 2019, a study showed that the average rent in apartments went from $647 a month to nearly $1,153. So we've seen in a short period of time, I'm sorry, from 2000 to 2018, we saw that big jump. It's a 78% spike in rents in our county. You know, what's considered affordable is 30% of people's income. I've been putting out just some kind of feelers to get a sense. I put it on my Instagram story to get a sense of if people feel like that's what they're paying. Many people in Salt Lake County, many renters in Salt Lake County, even homeowners, are paying more than 30% of their mm-hmm. of their income. And that puts people in a really precarious situation. So I'm concerned about how quickly our rents have increased. I'm concerned about the affordability, long-term affordability of Salt Lake County. And when I'm thinking about growth and all the challenges that we have, really focused on what we can do to put more on the market mm-hmm. to really drive that cost down is something that's of interest to me. And I'm worried about how a spike like this and people being evicted in a pandemic can lead to further strain on our homeless resource infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And that's a system that's already strained. So yeah. There's a lot going on in that space that I'm keeping my eye on. And I'm very worried about.
Interesting. Dan, you're welcome to comment on that. But I did want to ask you about the Cook Political Report shifting the McAdams-Owens congressional race from a lean Democrat to a toss-up.
Yeah, if this surprises anyone who has been in Utah for longer than 15 minutes and paid attention to politics, I welcome them to my bridge sale in Arizona. I will be selling bridges. Look, that race is going to come down to, I will call it right now, it will be within 2,500 votes, period.
Interesting. And make note, listeners.
Yeah, within 2,500 votes, and the fact that Ben signed up for it just shows you what a glutton of punishment he is, that if he wins this time and he wins again, like, he's going to constantly have this fight. But, you know, Burgess Owens is not a slack. It's not someone you can just sleep on, and I think Ben McAdams knows that. And so it's going to be a very interesting race.
Shireen, I'm going to go to you for an expression of gratitude or a gripe. We've got about 90 seconds on the program left today.
Oh, wow. So I would say an expression of gratitude that I have is I know we've been seeing extreme heat, and that, again, is a particular challenge for our older individuals and our vulnerable populations. There's a lot of effort happening to try to make sure that people who are homeless, experiencing homelessness, have access to water. We've opened the cooling centers in Salt Lake County to try to get people into a place where they can be safe. And I'm just grateful for that attention.
Yeah. Dan?
I'm grateful for the mask take-up rate. I don't go anywhere where people aren't wearing masks. And honestly, I am grateful. And it was really cool the other day. I was in an area and someone did not have a mask, and there were kind of four of us talking, and this other person walked up and immediately everyone kind of backed away from that person. It was really interesting to see, you know, and still kept the person in the conversation type of thing, but took some space.
Pretty visual.
People and our numbers are going down.
Yeah.
Our numbers are looking good.
Well, it's interesting. That's exactly where I was. I wanted to just say, you know, case counts are falling, ICU counts, hospitalization rates, the case fatality rate, all down, down, down. Stay the course, Utahns. Keep wearing those masks. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm with Shireen Gorbani on the left and McKay on the right. We love our producer, Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.